In deze podcast, u aangeboden door Daiichi Sankyo en AstraZeneca, kunt u luisteren naar het gesprek over het effect van trastuzumab deruxtecan op hersenmetastase bij patiënten met HER2-positieve borstkanker, gevoerd door internist-oncoloog Koos van der Hoeven met Rupert Bartsch, internist-oncoloog aan de Medische Universiteit van Wenen in Oostenrijk. Aan bod komen onder andere de Tuxedo 1-studie, die is gepresenteerd tijdens de ESMO Congress 2021.
ESMO 2021 Paris. It was very interesting, especially for breast cancer. And I go to speak with Professor Bartsch. He is a medical oncologist at the University Clinic in Vienna, Austria. And he had a presentation about brain metastasis in HER2-positive breast cancer and the role that the trastuzumab deruxtecan can play in it. It was the so-called Tuxedo 1 study. Welcome, Professor Bartsch. Since when were you involved in the development of trastuzumab deruxtecan in breast cancer?
Well, thanks very much for the invitation. Great being here with you. Thanks for the kind introduction. We started working with trastuzumab deruxtecan with the Tuxedo 1 trial. So that was our first clinical experience with T-DXd. Obviously, the development of the study, it's an investigator-initiated study, took longer. But the first patient we were able to include in August 2020.
Okay. At the ESMO, there were very promising data about trastuzumab deruxtecan in breast cancer, in metastatic breast cancer. But you did a study in patients. All the patients had to have brain metastasis. Why did you conduct this study?
Yeah, that's the great question, of course. Now, as you know, brain metastases are very common in patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer, and there is always a need to find effective systemic treatment options. Traditionally, the treatment approach was with local therapy, traditionally whole brain radiotherapy, but we know today that patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer and brain metastases can live in excess of more than 2 years. So they have a very good overall survival meanwhile. And these patients will eventually experience the late neurocognitive decline of whole brain radiotherapy. Yeah. So that led to growing interest in systemic treatment options. And of course, initially, we all were interested in small molecule tyrosine kinase inhibitors. But we've learned from earlier observations that also larger molecules, such as antibodies or antibody drug conjugates even, can penetrate into brain metastasis because the blood tumor barrier is not as tight, more leaky than the blood brain barrier. So we knew from earlier observations that there is activity of TDM1, and that led us to the Tuxedo 1 trial because we believe that T-DXd is superior to TDM1. And we've heard before that T-DXd offers significant activity in patients progressing after T-DM1. So it seemed the logical way to observe here if there is activity of a novel treatment option.
Okay. Maybe we can discuss the blood-brain barrier afterwards.
Okay.
But maybe you can say something about the presence of brain metastasis in patients with HER2-positive breast cancer. Is that more frequent than in other patients with breast cancer?
We have seen an increase in the rate of patients with brain metastasis since the early 2000s. And that is mainly attributed because patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer today live longer. So they live to experience their brain metastasis. The HER2-positive subset seems to have a propensity to brain tissue. And when you wait long enough, there is a high rate of patients experiencing brain metastasis. This is in the rate of 40 to 50%. Please go ahead, please.
And we see it more frequently because they live longer, because we are able to treat these patients very well at the moment that they have metastatic disease.
Fully agreed with that, yeah.
But patients with brain metastasis of a HER2-positive breast cancer form a very heterogeneous population. How difficult is it to conduct a good study in this group of patients?
Yeah, I think it's difficult, and that's the reason why it's been rarely done up to now. I think you need to restrict the patient population that you're investigating. There are patients which are heavily pretreated, which present with severe neurological symptoms. There are patients with neurocognitive decline after whole brain radiotherapy, for example. Of course, your response, your potential response will also depend upon the number of prior treatment lines. And you also need to think of the systemic disease situation. Is this a patient with brain-only disease, or does she also present with liver metastasis? Is the extracranial disease stable or progressing, and so on and so forth? And then, of course, there are patients who not only have parenchymal brain metastasis, but leptomeningeal involvement as well. So what we did was we tried to restrict to a patient population with ECOG 0 and 1, a patient population without immediate need for local therapy, and a patient population without leptomeningeal involvement.
And you said without an immediate need to local therapy. That means that they might be symptomatic from the brain metastasis.
We felt we should restrict it either to patients with limited symptoms, so oligosymptomatic disease or asymptomatic disease. Because our knowledge about the activity of systemic treatment in patients with highly symptomatic disease, severe neurological symptoms, about the activity of systemic therapy is still very limited.
Yeah, that is the bridge to all the inclusion criteria. Maybe you can mention some more inclusion criteria for the study.
Well, it was HER2-positive breast cancer, brain metastasis, measurable brain disease by RANO-BM criteria, no leptomeningeal involvement, ejection fraction in excess of 50% or more, life expectancy of 3 months plus, and prior treatment with trastuzumab and pertuzumab. Prior treatment with T-DM1 was allowed, but not mandatory.
Okay.
And patients had to have either, and this is perhaps the key inclusion criteria, they had to have active brain metastasis, which means either brain metastasis which were newly diagnosed or which are progressing on prior local therapy.
So silent metastasis were not allowed.
Stable metastasis were not allowed. So a patient who had, for example, stereotactic radiosurgery a year ago is on trastuzumab, pertuzumab maintenance therapy still, now has extracranial progression, but intracranially she's still stable. These patients were not allowed. So the patient had to have progressive brain metastasis by RANO-BM criteria.
Okay. You were able to find these patients and you collected in the meantime 90 patients. Is that correct?
15 patients. That was the target population, 15 patients.
Yeah.
And yes, we managed to do it in about a year.
Okay. And what were the results in these 15 patients?
Well, we have now the results of the first stage. The trial applied a Simon Optimal two-stage design. And the first stage consisted of 6 patients. And in these 6 patients, a response by RANO-BM criteria was observed in 5 patients. Mm-hmm. So 5 patients out of 6 had a complete or partial remission of brain metastasis with T-DXd.
And is there already something known about the duration of this response?
Well, it seems to be prolonged. We don't have any data yet, naturally. With the data we presented at the ESMO meeting, there was a median follow-up of 6.5 months. And several patients seem to benefit in terms of progression-free survival in the range of 1 year. But of course, we don't have any PFS data yet because the sample is still too small. Of the patients we presented, only one has progressed meanwhile.
Okay, the numbers are low, but the percentage of patients that are responding is very high. And that makes that we can already try to draw some conclusions for clinical practice, or is it too early?
It's always a hard question, and of course you point the finger to it. These are very small numbers, but I think it's not so much about defining a novel treatment standard, it's just to a proof of principle that TDXD offers significant clinical activity also in patients with active brain metastasis. I think this is really what the trial wants to show, that ADCs are a reasonable option in the subset of patients with active brain metastasis.
Yeah. You go further with this study. How many patients do you want to collect in total?
Well, in Tuxedo 1, the overall population target was set for 15 patients.
Okay.
Again, it's the Simon optimal two-stage design. So we finished recruitment meanwhile. It's called Tuxedo 1, so there are plans or there were plans for a continuation study, but this is still a matter of debate also with the manufacturer of TDXD. But I think we will talk a little bit about it later, but there are several other trials ongoing asking a similar question.
The numbers are low, but can you say something about the difference in the response between symptomatic and asymptomatic patients with brain metastasis?
We included patients also with oligosymptomatic disease, so with low symptom burden, but symptomatic disease nonetheless. They're also responding. There is no difference. And what we have observed is that the responses intracranially are similar to the extracranial response, so they're early and they're deep.
Okay. Radiotherapy is the treatment of choice for patients with brain metastasis until now. But in this study, there were also patients who did not receive radiotherapy before. And can you say something about the response in these patients?
Yeah, they are responding as well. So we had observed responses both in patients with prior local therapy and in patients with de novo brain metastasis, so untreated active brain metastasis. I agree with you that radiotherapy still is the treatment of choice, but we're talking about stereotactic radiosurgery or focal radiotherapy here. If you're only, then of course, in a patient with 3-4 brain metastasis, stable extracranial disease, I would definitely opt for focal local radiotherapy and continuing the obviously active systemic treatment. In a patient, however, with multiple brain metastasis, where your only alternative would be whole brain radiotherapy, I would recommend to go for systemic therapy first. Of course, we have the best data from the HER2CLIMB trial with tucatinib, but obviously ADCs also are an option. And these patients I would treat with systemic therapy first in order to prolong the time up until whole brain radiotherapy is needed. And this is a concept which was very nicely shown already in the wonderful Landscape trial of Thomas Bagelot with lapatinib capecitabine, where in patients with newly diagnosed, non-pretreated active brain metastasis, and response rate of 66% was observed, and time to whole brain radiotherapy was in excess of 8 months.
And it is in order to avoid the cognitive problems of patients who receive radiotherapy and who still have a long time to live.
Absolutely. That's exactly the point.
There were also patients in the study that were treated before with T-DM1. And they had a response on trastuzumab deruxtecan. Can you give an explanation for it? Is it so that the trastuzumab deruxtecan can pass the blood-brain barrier more easy than T-DM1? Or is there another explanation? Is it the load of the antibody drug conjugate that makes the difference?
We know from the DB01 trial, of course, that TDXD offers great activity in patients progressing on prior T-DM1. So the concept of ADC after ADC is something which is firmly established. Regarding the exact mechanism of action of what's happening here within the brain, I think T-DXd offers several potential advantages. I don't think it can pass through the blood-brain barrier more easily. The blood tumor barrier is impaired at the metastatic site. The tight junctions are not as tight as with the blood-brain barrier. Larger molecules can get into the metastasis. But I think then it's the specific pharmacological points of T-DXd which are important here. And as you correctly mentioned, it's the higher drug-to-antibody ratio. It's the fact that it's a cleavable linker system. It's the fact that deruxtecan is more membrane permeable. So in the end, I think you can solve several problems here with T-DXd, and T-DXd is clearly superior to T-DM1, especially in heterogeneous tumors. So if you have tumor cells which are HER2 negative as well, the famous bystander effect. I think it's overall the superior drug. Naturally, it also has more side effects, this we have to acknowledge. But it seems to be the superior drug not only in patients with extracranial disease, but also in patients with active brain metastasis.
You also mentioned the side effects of trastuzumab deruxtecan. Did you see side effects that were not already known?
No. We didn't see any side effects that were not already known. Overall, the drug was well tolerated, as expected from the larger phase 2-3 trials. We had one patient on the trial who experienced grade 2 ILD, interstitial lung disease. This is something which we know is relatively common with trastuzumab deruxtecan treatment. She was symptomatic, slightly symptomatic. We started her on corticosteroids, discontinued T-DXd, and she does very well.
You mentioned lapatinib, and you also mentioned tucatinib. That's also a promising drug in the brain metastasis of HER2-positive breast cancer patients. Can you say something about tucatinib in comparison with trastuzumab deruxtecan?
Well, we don't have any direct comparison. From the randomized HER2-CLIMB trial, I think we have the best evidence implicating significant activity in brain metastasis for the triple combination of tucatinib, capecitabine, and trastuzumab. In the HER2-CLIMB trial, about half of the patients included had brain metastasis at baseline, and of this sample, around 60% active brain metastasis. So this is the largest proportion of patients with active brain metastasis ever randomized into a prospective phase 2 study. So congratulations again for this design. You see a significant prolongation of intracranial progression-free survival and also overall survival with the addition of tucatinib to trastuzumab and capecitabine. So I think it's clear at the moment that this sets the standard. We don't have any direct comparison of the two drugs, tucatinib and T-DXd. But given the emerging data we are seeing now for the activity of T-DXd in brain metastasis as well, I would suggest that T-DXd also offers significant activity there, although formally, of course, the best evidence is with tucatinib.
Very promising results for patients with systemic metastasis and also for brain metastasis by the addition of trastuzumab deruxtecan. For this promising drug, what will be the future?
Of course, we need further research with systemic treatment options in patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. We do perhaps even more need brain metastasis research in patients with triple-negative breast cancer. As you know, triple-negative breast cancer patients also have a high rate of brain metastasis, and the situation might be even more desperate there because the treatment options are much more limited. There are several trials ongoing at the moment exploring the activity of T-DXd in patients with brain metastasis. There's the DEBRA trial ongoing in Portugal and Spain, and then, of course, there is the DESTINY-Breast012 trial ongoing, which also includes a cohort of patients with active brain metastasis. So I would feel that on the long run, we will see from several prospective trials that T-DXd has considerable and clinically relevant activity in patients with active brain metastasis.
Okay, I think that is a beautiful next word in this podcast. I want to thank you very much for your information. Thank you.
Bent u geïnteresseerd in meer podcasts? Deze zijn te vinden op de website oncologie.nu.